This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Place to Be Nation universe, welcome back. It's been a while, and we're here to talk about Money in the Bank. That's part of our WWE pay-per-view series. I'm your host, Chris Zoner, joined as always by my co-hosts on these shows, the Oracle of the WWE, Devin Hales. And Devin, doesn't seem like it's been 6 weeks or more, whatever it's been, but man, the time has flown by, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's kind of, to the point now where, a lot of interesting things are seemingly going to happen in the WWE universe. God, I sound like I'm working for him now.
Let's talk about this before we get to the show. In the 6 weeks or so since Mania, the WWE has become, totally different from where we last left off, because we had the Superstar Shakeup take place, and then panic sets in due to low ratings, and now we have this wild card system in effect, and it's more and more of Vince McMahon becoming way more hands-on, and not in the usual methods either, as has been reported lately, that instead of Vince mainly listening to his key confidants, supposedly he's listening to way too many people now, and things are changing more and more because he hears an idea that somebody puts out and he automatically puts it in, and it pretty much damages any type of long-term storytelling they're trying to do. So what's been your opinion of the last 6 weeks or so of WWE?
WrestleMania had a pretty satisfying conclusion in terms of the booking, and I think the right people won for the most part on that show. And then I think they've been through 6 weeks of boring, stagnant wrestling that I honestly have not cared a single lick about, Chris, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you.
This has been the least interested I've been. I've been watching out of the appointment viewing sort of deal. I don't care about anything, to be perfectly honest.
The shakeup. The shakeup was good, and I think the week after things started, looked okay, and then right after that, it's just gone downhill.
Right. There are a few things I'm interested in. I really like the Bray Wyatt character deal.
Yeah.
I have my skepticism on it. The latest installment of Firefly Funhouse, I think, feeds into my skepticism some a little bit, because although I do like the look of the mask and whatever, and I think that there still could be some interesting good things to come out of it. We don't know yet.
He wasn't on the show at all tonight.
Right. Well, I mean, his child was just born this weekend.
Yeah.
So, that was probably a
although
factor.
There were yowie wowie chants in the main event. So.
Yes, there were. yes. Has become quite the catchphrase.
Mm-hmm.
I've liked Bray. I liked Sami Zayn, the anti-smart. but then they turned him into Sami Zayn of 2018, 2017,
yeah,
where he's like a cowardly heel now. Not that he wouldn't have been I was enjoying the anti-smart stuff.
Put him back with Braun more, all over but, again.
Right. That's just kind of silly. The end ring hasn't really gone down. It's just sort of, there's been plenty of good matches throughout the programming. It's just, right, there you go. It's just been a really soulless 6 weeks. I always sort of had a theory, once I found out about the Fox deal several months back, once it became very clear that was going to happen. A part of me thinks they're just kind of waiting it out till October. Riding the storm.
Well, you know, I would say actually probably they're more towards SummerSlam. You know, the build for SummerSlam, and then they're gonna, you know, catapult from there. Because after SummerSlam is when the hype really starts to come in on Fox.
True.
Because Fox will start airing NFL preseason games, and then of course the regular season will start after Labor Day. So
real quick, because I don't want to get too off track, but I hope everybody's ready, and I know I'm ready to hear Joe Buck have to read WWE SmackDown ads and the Inside the NBA crew talk about Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks. like that's got to be the most exciting news in the last 6 weeks is that AEW is going to be on TNT and we get to have Charles Barkley.
Yeah,
talk
yeah,
about
I
it,
mean,
maybe one day.
It's already kind of started on the regionals, where you know you watch Braves games, and I've seen it multiple times, where Chip Carey's had to read off plugs for you know SmackDown coming to Fox, and it's funny in retrospect because his dad hated wrestling and openly would bury it on Braves games when he had to talk about it on TBS, you know, so. It is pretty funny to watch the, you know, real sports announcers have to put this over. So it's going to get more and more as we go along. But anyway, Money in the Bank was tonight. And they needed something bad. They needed a spark to come out of this show. Did they get it? Well, we'll talk about it here. All right, we begin with the pre-show where... They did so for the first time in the pre-show. They had co-host, as Coach and Charlie both were host of the pre-show, which was interesting.
That was a please, Charlie, save the pre-shows from being an absolute disaster because Jonathan Coachman's terrible at his job.
I didn't know. I totally forgot the pre-show started at 6. Because I was recording Between the Sheets stuff, and Bix, my co-host, was like, you know, the pre-show's probably on right now. I was like, oh, shit. So I turned over there, and I didn't miss anything, thank God. But I saw that. I was like, wow, okay, this is different. So we had one pre-show match, and this was interesting. It was Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan, the SmackDown Tag Champions, against the Usos from Raw. I hate this whole thing. I hate this wild card system. I hate it. And
it's lame. It sucks. It's stupid.
So we got Raw and SmackDown against each other here. It was not specified. I don't think. Now, I may be wrong, but I know lots of other people on Twitter were the same way. This was not specified as a non-title match. Did you know this was a non-title match?
I did not. But they also did not specify it as a title match. If you look on the graphic, each of the graphics they posted, there was no indication that the belts were on the line. You know, they will say that, to be fair, in their defense. But they didn't really mention, you know, like, so a lot of, you know, I went on Wikipedia, and Wikipedia said it was a non-title match. And I thought, well, Wikipedia is not necessarily the most trustworthy source. No. So I went to Cage Match, and I thought, oh, you know, Cage Match might have a more accurate, thing. Well, Cage Match said it was for the tag titles. I thought, okay, well, Cage Match, I trust them more. So I thought coming in, the tag belts would be on the line. But then I saw the graphic when the pre-show began. I thought, oh, wait, you know what? I bet it won't be for the tag belts. And then I started to think about it, mostly probably right around the time the match started. I thought, wait a minute. It's because it's a stupid wild card rule, maybe. And that's why the tag titles aren't on the line here. But like you said, they didn't specify it. It was very confusing.
Yeah, very ambiguous. But the match was good either way, which has to be expected for the guys involved. And Brian got super kicked like crazy here. Usos came off top rope with their double splash on Brian, not Rowan, Brian, to get the pinfall. And then they said the match that now they've earned a title match. So, yes, we have the Raw guys. Getting a SmackDown tag title match. That's a good match, good opener for the pre-show. Again, I hate this wild card thing. But I'll talk about the Usos real quick. The Usos on Raw have been involved in the humiliation of the Revival lately. And I've seen people on social media talk about how this has kind of taken the Usos down a step and kind of put them back in a position where they're like more comedy type guys. Where do you fall on in that regard and your thoughts on the match itself?
Yeah, you know, I do agree on that first thought. You know, I do think they look really kind of stupid and silly doing all these terrible segments. I mean, that Revival segment where they did the whole, like, you know, what was it? The
shave your back.
No, not even the
shave. Oh, the one. The Icy Hot?
The
Icy Hot.
First of all, Icy Hot doesn't burn that like Oosie that, hot. First of all. First of all, it's not that bad. So, I mean, it was just, oh, God, it was stupid. That's legitimately one of the worst segments I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of the worst things I've ever seen. It was really, really bad. It was embarrassing. Like, and it wasn't even like, I don't know, it's just stupid. And it does make the Usos look stupid. And I agree and with some people that it actually makes the Usos look worse than
it does. Absolutely. The Revival's out there. The Revival's out there. Everybody knows what's going on. They're being, you know, they're being humiliated and they're going out there and they're playing it up, man. They're being champs with it and it makes them come off better in the long run. And you got, and it's the, and the Usos, it's not their fault. They're just doing what they're told, but it makes the Revival come off as way better and by perception.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. As far as the match goes, it was good. I thought the title match a couple of weeks ago was excellent and much better. I didn't necessarily think this would be quite as good, but it was good. Bryan is my number one overall in-ring performer this year in WWE. I think he's been outstanding. The Kofi rematch was tremendous for the title a few weeks ago when he came back. The tag title match from a few weeks ago was excellent. So he's been really, really awesome. You know, they have him in tags, which I think is interesting. You know, I don't know what type of injury he had or if he was injured or whatnot, but it's sort of interesting that they're keeping him in tags. But I do like the Rowan tag team. I think Rowan does well in this role, and I think he was awfully good tonight, actually. I thought he did a good job as the big man on the hillside. But, yeah, I like this match. It's a good match. Bryan taking the pinfall is interesting, but Bryan is in the state of his career, and I think he has a lot of pull for what he wants to do with his feuds and storylines and matches. And it wouldn't, you know, Bryan is in the putting people over stage in a lot of ways. And I think Bryan enjoys putting people over. You know, normally I think you would think Rowan would take that pin, but if you think how Bryan thinks, I think it sort of makes sense. Because at first I was a little bit surprised that he took the pin. But yeah, this was a good little opener. I liked it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what happens. I'm sure title match will be coming soon, maybe as early as Tuesday. But we'll see where we go from here. All right. We start the show proper with the women's Money in the Bank match. We have Naomi, Carmella, Mandy Rose, Nikki Cross replacing Alexa Bliss, Ember Boone, Bayley, Natalya, and Dana Brooke. Now, Alexa's had some concussion issues lately. And they thought for the best. And watching this match, that was absolutely true. She should not have been involved in this match because these women were doing wild, crazy stuff here in a different way from the men. The men, who we'll talk about later, was doing all these dynamic dives and bumps and all kinds of stuff involving the ladders. These girls were just out there doing what they do. Control chaos and just hitting each other hard. You know, just awkward type stuff. But, man, it was just great to watch. Great spectacle. Some of the highlights, we had Sonya Deville being involved, injuring, quote-unquote, Carmella, who had to be helped to the back. And, of course, she would return later to get involved. Then we had Sonya at one point put Mandy Rose on her back and climbed up the ladder, to the top of the ladder, no less. That's some strength on Sonya Deville's part. And then Bayley climbed up the other side, knocked them both off the ladder, and she got the briefcase to win. Another spot in this match, probably the most impressive spot of them all, was Ember Moon hitting the Eclipse. She was standing on a ladder on the floor, jumped in the ring, dove in the ring, and hit the Eclipse on Natalya. It was perfect. Just everything about that was great. And, of course, you had your women on the ladder taking bumps off the ladder and all this other stuff. And, yeah, this was exactly what the women needed. The women have not had a great last 6 weeks. You could definitely tell that the old feelings have come through again regarding the women, I would say. Other than Becky and Charlotte or so. But it seemed like the women were stuck in short matches. They weren't in as many segments on the show. It just, I don't know. They were doing the Becky, Charlotte, Lacey stuff, which we'll talk about later. But everybody else was like pushed to the side. And Bayley gets the win here. Bayley, of course, had the match with Becky on SmackDown. It was Becky, right? Becky and Bayley had the match on SmackDown. And Bayley, of course, you know, had come off the team with Sasha Banks. Sasha, of course, is on her sabbatical right now. And Bayley hadn't been on TV in recent weeks because of this goddamn wild card shit. And because that hurt SmackDown more than anything else. More Raw people on SmackDown and let the SmackDown people who have 1 hour less not have a chance to get on the show. But
meanwhile, we haven't even seen Liv Morgan or Buddy Murphy or Aleister Black. Aleister Black's done its, you know, done his promo.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
It.
So Bayley gets the win here, and the crowd was really happy for her. They're really excited, and it would get even more as we go later on in the show. But Charlie interviewed Bayley after the match, and Sasha Banks was openly talked about for the first time by Bayley. You know, so, and it was mentioned that Bayley's on SmackDown, Sasha's on Raw. So, I don't know. We'll see. But what was your thoughts on Bayley winning and the match itself?
Bringing up Sasha real quick, she did have that one cryptic tweet. You know, Sasha Banks is one of the, you know, kings, queens, bosses, laugh out loud, of cryptic tweets. And she had the damn thank you one yesterday, if you recall. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was. So I don't know what that was about, but you know how these wrestlers and these carnies work. So, you know, you never know. The match I thought was pretty, you know, pretty damn good. I liked it. You know, it was a sloppy mess in a lot of ways, but, you know, the one thing I noticed about this and the one thing coming in is, you know, I always kind of wanted to see the women do a crazy spot foo ladder match. Mm-hmm. They never did one before, which is smart. You know, I mean, you know, the men do that shit every year, and it's ridiculous.
Especially this year. We'll talk about that later.
Right. You know, and, you know, I enjoy them. But I always thought, you know, let's see if the women can do this stuff. You know, recent years, it's been more about, you know, kind of building up to, you know, the drama of climbing the ladder and stuff. And they had that, you know, in spades tonight, but they also had a crazy spot fest, which they've never done in the 3 years they've done these women's Money in the Bank ladder matches. The first one I really felt was like the traditional, you know, insane expectations of what a Money in the Bank ladder match is, where people are just doing absurd things. You know, they did some neat stuff. With Naomi, who had quite the entrance, and was like Queen
Bee
or something.
Yeah, she looked like she should have been,
you know,
with
interesting gear.
B. Brian Blair and Jim Brunzel.
There you go.
She looked great.
And absolutely. It was a great look.
Early on in the match, she was the star of the match.
Yes. Oh yeah. You know, she got to use her athleticism and got to do some cool spots where she avoided the ladders and used her defense to her advantage. Nikki Cross got to shine early, especially early in the match. really, I thought was great, the spot where, I don't remember what happened, the ladder was pushed over, and the ladder hit her in the hip and scratched and cut her hip. And she was hit for the rest of the match. Because I bet that hurt like a motherfucker. Then later in the match, Bayley gets on that hip in between the ladder. And then takes another crazy bump on the ladder, which probably hurt her again. So she, in a lot of ways, took the most damage and had the most visible damage. Yeah, there were a lot of crazy stuff. You mentioned the eclipse, which was definitely the spot of the match. That got the crowd, you know, doing their standing ovation bit, and it was deserved. Great drama at the end. They did the Carmella kind of did the 2011 Miz deal. You remember in 2011 when Miz, they did the leg knee injury with Miz, and teased him winning it again. Michael Cole was going crazy on commentary, and then Daniel Bryan won, and Michael Cole was going crazy again because he was heel Michael Cole at the time. So they did that with Carmella, although she was a babyface here, and Miz was a heel at the time. But that's kind of the first thing I thought of when they were doing that. This was a really good match. This is actually my favorite of the women's Money in the Bank ladder matches. Maybe it makes me a spot monkey fan or something when it comes to ladder matches.
And that's what they're supposed to be.
Not necessarily. right. I mean, there are matches like, you know, Shawn and Razor from SummerSlam 95 or Candido and Tracy from Tracy Smothers from SMW.
It's different because they're single matches.
That are, right. There you go, though. Exactly. You know, with multiple people, you sort of want and expect the spot fest. And I think we finally got that here. And it also helped that we didn't have Tamina, running, directing traffic.
Or Nia.
I mean, there you go. Yes. That was good. Bayley was the veteran directing traffic in this match, and that tells you a lot of things. Natty wasn't as front and center as she was in previous years. And I don't think Natty's particularly good at that. Even though she is a veteran, I don't think she's particularly good at doing, sort of calling a ladder spot fest. I feel like Bayley was probably, although I feel like Natty probably was in their spots, but Bayley was sort of the one front and center involved in a lot of things. This was a really good match. I enjoyed it. Bayley got the big win. I really liked her promo in the post match actually. This was a really good start to the show, proper.
Absolutely, and it felt like the right person won.
Yes,
which is always good.
I popped.
Because,
I was very satisfied.
Later on, we might not be able to say that. All right. Next, we get Sami Zayn with Triple H is on the phone. I'm sure complaining about Vince to somebody. And Sami was looking for Shane because he's scared of Braun. Triple H announced Braun was banned from the building. Sami asked Triple H for some protection. Triple H told me he wanted protection tape up his fist. I was expecting some type of line about rubbers, but we didn't get that from Triple H. So, foreshadowing for what's to come with Sami. Next was a very interesting match. United States Heavyweight title, Samoa Joe in a rematch from WrestleMania, defending as Rey Mysterio Jr. This match went a total of 93 seconds. Rey pinned him with a hurricanrana off a powerbomb. But the problem was, Joe's shoulders were not down all the way. The left shoulder was off the mat. Definitely planned because of the way they really were putting it home on the commentary. And then we had Joe just beat the shit out of Ray after the match. Dominic, Ray's son, was at ringside emoting. Joe daring him to get in the ring. Joe just beat the shit out of Dominic. Dominic, of course, is a giant son. So he eventually helped Ray to go to the back. So maybe the best built angle they've got going on right now in the company is Samoa Joe and Dominic. But the story of this match is the finish. Now, as we record, Fightful Wrestling, Sean Ross Sapp, reported that WWE made an immediate call to go home early for this match because Samoa Joe's face was a wreck. Definitely, he got a broken nose on a raised desk press, and it could have been other damage around his face as well. He was bleeding, and supposedly they made the call to stop the match early. That's what's being reported. That could be true. I mean, I kind of thought this was playing off of the Mania finish where Joe won so early, and now Ray gets his quick win over Joe. So we'll see what happens in the coming days after this. But, I mean, for what it was, I mean, it made sense. It did make sense for Ray to win quick since they were doing that. And they did the whole shoulder deal. And they're building up the Dominic, getting involved. So I like the whole thing. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens down the line. So what's your thoughts on all this?
It was fine for a sprint, you know, for what it was. I just wanted to see these guys have a good match as a fan of good in-ring wrestling. So I was a little bit frustrated with that, but I do agree that it sort of mirrored, it did mirror the WrestleMania finish and match. And I want to see Joe choke out Dominic, please, because the heat for
Now, there are two schools of thought here. All right, it's either Joe's going to choke out Dominic, or Dominic's going to turn on his dad and go with Samoa Joe because they do share similar haircuts. So where do you would you rather see Dominic get choked out or Dominic turn on his dad?
Ooh, that's tough.
And claim that Eddie Guerrero was his real dad to really bring it back.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing. that's. Boy, you put me on the spot there, Chris. that's a tough call.
Either one, I think is going to work. And you know, they have done a good job of building this up. The fact that we're here talking about this with legitimate interest and the scenarios that could play out, it's not that hard to do stuff like this.
No,
they try to make it as hard as possible. But it's not that hard. So, Ray's U.S. champion again. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens for sure. Where we go. What's the next pay-per-view after this one?
Well, Crown.
I'm not counting Super Show now. Not counting that.
Okay. Stomping Grounds.
Oh, boy. Stomping Grounds. Yes. Tremendous. So, we'll see if there's...
June 23rd. So, if anything
takes place on Stomping Grounds between these two, probably will.
That sounds like the name of a wrestling pay per view I would have given my backyard wrestling promotion in like 2002.
Stomping Grounds.
Stomping Grounds.
All right. Well, that was what it was. All right. Next, steel cage match. As we had a cage music playing. Now, right before this, Braun's going around the back, throwing boxes around, being pissed off. And the cage music started playing as this was going on. So the cage drops. Shane McMahon versus The Miz. So we have all kinds of stuff going on here. Chair shots was involved. Lots of stuff involving the cage, using the cage to their advantage. Climbing the cage, teasing that finish. Shane going for his Van Terminator and Miz blocking him awkwardly. And Miz hit a skull crusher for now in the chair. They tried one on top rope. That didn't work out so well. There was an interesting deal here where Miz had Shane pinned. Shane's foot was on the ropes, and the referee decided he was going to say that was a break. And on commentary, which is rare, this happens, they brought the logic that, hey, this is a steel cage match with no disqualifications. Why are they calling that rope break spot? And the story was, as Corey Graves was telling, was the ref stopped counting because Shane's his boss. So now we have some issues with the referee in two straight matches. The Samoa Joe shoulder, and now this. That's great. But anyway, Shane and Miz climbed to the top of the cage. Miz was trying to superplex Shane off the top. And as this happens, and I'll give him this. This was kind of a creative finish. Shane comes out of his shirt and falls to the floor to win. Amazing. So Shane McMahon wins over the Miz yet again. Your thoughts?
My brother Dustin thinks they'll drag this out to SummerSlam. But I
Hell in a Cell, Shane McMahon versus the Miz.
There you go. This was kind of fun in its own. It was not necessarily a good match. It was fine. I thought it was kind of fun. Shane is just a total wreck of a backyard wrestler, and it's amazing to watch sometimes.
I love what your brother Dylan said about him on Twitter. He's like, he's going to just keep throwing those shitty punches. You know, he's convicted. He's going to just keep doing it. You know, you got to give him some credit for his conviction.
I like when he would like do the spider spot on the cage. You know, Miz would launch him into the cage and Shane would like sloppily do the spider spot, like his 49-year-old self trying to do the spider spot and climb up the cage, which he did so terribly. But it was amazing to watch. This match was really entertaining. It was hilarious to see Shane kick out of all of Miz's offense. It was funny as fuck. Because it's Shane and it's hilarious.
There was an AEW chat at one point during this match, too.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I think it may have been the only time that happened. But yes, there was an AEW chant during this match. And can we say that ever since Shane, and they've been doing this intro for Shane, that Greg Hamilton now has decided that he's going to, you know, over-enunciate everybody's intro now?
Oh, I know. He's getting himself over.
Oh, yeah. He is definitely hamming it up now in the intros.
But yeah, this was a fun match. You know, Shane did have one nasty thing happen to him. Every match, Shane has something scary happen to him. You know, the spot for this one was when Miz shut the cage door on Shane's head, and I literally thought he would have been open hard way. I was surprised he didn't bleed.
And that would have been a spot years ago a humongous deal, and it's just a throwaway spot in the match now.
Right. Right. But yeah, I thought this was a clever finish, really smart. They're obviously going to draw this out. I don't know if it will end at Super Showdown without a hyphen. That's what I'm going to call the show. or if it'll go to Extreme Rules or something, whatever. But obviously, I think this will continue. And, you know, Shane's got multiple feuds. He's, you know, he's feuding Bam. Too.
I think it might be over. I'm thinking that if it's not over, it's ending very soon because they're really going to go into the Shane Roman mode even more. I got to think.
Okay.
So.
Right.
I mean, we'll see. Miz needs to do something else.
Yes, he does.
He can't just keep losing to Shane McMahon.
I'll be interested to see how over he stays as a babyface if he isn't feuding with somebody like Shane. That's interesting to me. Because Miz's babyface run in 2013 was a massive failure. like when Ric Flair, like, you know, taught him the figure four. Remember that
shit?
Oh,
yes.
That was a massive failure. So I'll be interested to see babyface Miz after the Shane McMahon feud.
Damn Corbin or something, you know.
There you go. I mean, hell, nobody's going to boo Miz against Baron Corbin.
That's true. Corbin and Lashley. I mean, that's who he's destined for.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I'm interested in that. But like I said, fun match, clever ending. I liked it for what it was.
Yep. So we'll see what happens from here. All right, they made an announcement that kind of just blew everybody's minds. They announced that Mick Foley will be on Raw tomorrow night, or tonight, when you listen to this. and announced that the WWE will create a new championship. Everybody and their brother believes this has to be the return of the hardcore title or something along that line, especially with Foley's involvement. What do you think about this?
I mean, that's got to be it, right? You know, I was talking with my brother about this, Dustin. And, you know, he doesn't seem to think it makes sense because the style
doesn't
really...
They don't do that stuff no more.
You know, they don't do that stuff. Although I will say a hardcore title with 24/7 rules would work way better in the sense of the social media age.
Yes.
I mean, WWE could post a video at 2:30 a.m., you know, of somebody losing the hardcore title at a hotel room or something. Like, you know, they could really utilize social media, and that might be the route that they're going with here. But I don't know. You know, it could be a TV title. But that doesn't scream
no.
WWE to my, you know, TV title.
Foley's involvement is the key. It's the key.
Right. I would say it'd be, I mean, I feel like it would be
a Saudi Arabian title.
I mean, there you go.
Why not? I think he's going to be a Super Showdown too, as well. So why not? Lord. So we'll see what happens. Another title coming to WWE.
There you go.
Now.
Wait, hold on. Hold on real quick. Sorry. Wasn't Foley the guy who was GM during the or commissioner during the Alliance angle and came out and cut a promo about how there were too many belts?
No.
And
he was not involved in the Alliance angle. He was gone.
I'm pretty sure he was a commissioner and had a promo because he came out. He was a commissioner for like after Regal turned heel and then came out and complained about
that was after the Alliance.
Then
because the hardcore title stayed, I think the hardcore title was around 2002.
Yes,
yeah,
it was
after the Alliance.
Yes, it was.
So it wasn't during the Alliance, but that happened. What you said happened, but it was after the Alliance. So,
okay.
All right. Next, we get a very interesting match to take place here. Cruiserweight title match on the main show, middle show. Tony Nese
before Game of Thrones started.
Yeah, Tony Nese against Ari Daivari. And this was a really good little match. Crowd didn't really give a shit. Of course not, but it was a really good little match. I got to give the 205 announcers, Vic Joseph, Aiden English, and Nigel McGuinness, I mean, credit. They really did a good job announcing the match. Match was fun. Nese got the big win. Ari Daivari came out in a brand new Mercedes-Benz. So, they surprised me here that they did this. That they put the Cruiserweight title match in here in this spot. And the guys had a decent match, but a good match. But, yeah, just weird, isn't it? That we had all those great Buddy Murphy defenses that was always on the pre-show. And then Tony Nese and Ari Daivari is the one that gets the middle of the main show match. Weird, isn't it? What's your thoughts?
You know, it was fine. I thought the first half was kind of bad. I thought Daivari was like maybe nervous or just wasn't hitting the spots well, kind of sloppy. Then I think they went, okay, we got to just start hitting crazy spots because the crowd were booing him because he had the one botch on his submission hold or whatever. And they're like, all right, let's just do crazy spots and it'll get him into it, and it did, and it worked, and it was a good ending. Nese retained. Yes, you know, match was fine. I just was fascinated with the idea that this match would go on when it did, considering I knew watching the show, and I'm going to bring this up again and bring up an interesting case, that they were going to try to get a lot of stuff in the first 2 hours because Game of Thrones series finale started at 9 o'clock Eastern. So they're getting in as much as they can. And they're getting in the angles and big stuff, and then, you know, the Foley, you know, announcing the new title with Foley, all this other stuff they're getting in before 9 o'clock because people are going to be turning over to HBO to watch Game of Thrones, and they're not going to be watching, or at least not everybody, but, you know, a lot of people are going to be turning off the pay-per-view or turning on Game of Thrones with the pay-per-view on in the background. So I was surprised that this match was where it was as far as card placement goes.
Yeah, makes sense. But as the show went on, I mean, they had a lot of big matches take place during the Game of Thrones blah.
They did, but I have an interesting it could just be me, but I have some interesting things to say about that.
All right. So knees retained. Triple H, Sami Zayn was taken out. All right. Sami Zayn was left hanging with his feet upside down. Blade been beat up. Triple H was running over there. By the time Triple H and the crew got over there, he was telling the camera guy to go back. And the prostitutes pushed the camera guy down. He fell on his ass. But he finds Braun Strowman. And he says, Braun, you know, he basically says, I know why you did it. Blah, 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 blah. And Braun says, I didn't do it. And Triple H says, okay, whatever you say. He says, I'm not going to arrest you. I'm not going to do all the regular tropes that we do. Just leave like a professional. And Braun left. So, it's fairly obvious it was not Braun Strowman that did this. So, do we think it's who it was later that came out to replace Sammy? Or do we think, like I thought originally on Twitter, and I thought was going to happen, is this Bray Wyatt?
I still think it might be Bray.
I do too.
I think if they're smart and if they're clever, you know, it's not going to be. You know, you really can't expect that from them. I think there's more mysteries there. Not just what happened in the main event, but I don't think that's related to what happened in the main event. I don't think that's what should be happened. I don't think that should be related either.
Now, do we think that? Now, here's the thing. Sammy is a Raw guy, although he has a wild card, so he goes SmackDown too. And but Bray's a Raw guy, although they should have Firefly Funhouse on SmackDown too. But I think Bray's gonna be a babyface in this whole thing. I think he kind of has to be. So a guy for him to feud with in his first feud would be somebody who has a character like Sami Zayn has, I think.
Right.
So
I agree.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. And let's just say this about Bray's new look. It's nice that he's become an amalgamation of all three carnies.
There you go.
Nick Gigg and Carry Off on Trip Cassidy. I mean, he's the amalgamation of all of them. So props to you, Bray. You've taken them all and made them one. All right. Next, we get the women's title extravaganza. Becky Lynch defends the Raw Women's title first against Lacey Evans. Lacey comes out there with little holsters on her side with guns filled with money. And they had Lacey's face on it. So she was making it rain her own way on the way to the ring. Of course, Becky comes out. Crowd was into it with Becky. Although during the match, the heat was in and out. But match was interesting. Lacey is still, I wouldn't say green, but she's still got a ways to go before she's ready for the primetime play, you know, matches. But I will say this about Lacey. I mean, she's really great at her gimmick. She has heat. Once she puts it all together, She could be something, although she is a little bit older than some of the other women. But I mean, she has potential for sure. Becky got her into the disarmor, so Becky won rightful decision. So what were your thoughts on the Becky Lacey situation here and their feud in general so far?
I really like the build up to this match. I think the feud's been pretty good. Really, really fun. The brawls have been really good. Lacey owns her gimmick. I'm not particularly a fan of the gimmick itself. Like, I like the idea of the gimmick, but I don't think that WWE knows what a sassy Southern Belle actually is.
Well, they're taking they're going more with that, like you would see in like Alabama or Mississippi of that, one that they would
right.
be
whose daughter's going to Ole Miss or something.
It's
okay.
A cotillion, yeah. You know, or something like that, you know.
right.
Like, do you remember that scene from Borat? Have you ever seen Borat? Where Borat was in Alabama, and he went to that that thing where they were having the dinner party.
Yes,
that's like what Lacey Evans would do. She would have like dinner parties with you know the manners and all that stuff. But she, I mean, she's got that. She still has the difference is she still carries over that look from the pinup girl thing that she was doing. So that's the difference in a way. So she's kind of being a Southern Belle from maybe the 60s or something like that, look wise. But so yeah, I got you there.
You know, offensively, I think she's, you know, got some interesting little things that she does. You know, I really dug the Gator roll deal that she did. You know, that was cool. I think she's kind of put it together offensively. I don't think she's particularly good at taking offense and basing for offense and selling and eating offense. She's got to work on that big time. I thought she was out of position several times. Commentary did a good job of covering up the spot where she was out of position for the drop kick early in the match. If you remember, Becky did her a drop kick from the
Camera angle and, helped too.
She was out of position.
They shot that from the perfect angle because the camera was behind Lacey. So if I mean watching it from that direction, you could actually see that Becky did hit her with one of her feet. So, I mean, if they had shot that from the side angle, then, yeah, it'd been totally different. So, that's one of the, you know, one of the times the WWE production was on the mark on something like that.
There you go. That's, you know, that's true. But, you know, I think Lacey, you know, once she can put it together in terms of basing on and eating offense, which is very important for heel. In a lot of ways, the most important. Then I think she'll become a very good wrestler overall as a package. but yeah, you know, the right person won. They did an interesting bit again where the rope, I don't know if it was just taking a long time to transition into the disarm or what, but there was that period, long period where. You know, I guess the idea was that the ref didn't think Becky shoulders were down.
Another referee issue. Yeah,
you know, another ref gaff issue type of deal, which is interesting. It was kind of a theme throughout the night, and the commentary brought it up pretty much every occasion. So, I don't know if there will be anything to that, but you know, it's just something, you know, kind of a food for thought thing. But yeah, you know, I thought the match was fine for what it was, and the right person won, and Lacey was made to look, you know, somewhat strong and competitive and. And, you know, went toe-to-toe with the champ and lost, but, you know, was made to look pretty good, especially a few minutes later, and we'll go ahead and get to that.
Yeah, and Lacey was kept around for what happens next. As Charlotte comes walking out immediately, as Becky's trying to go to the back, and she wants her match now. So, they go out there and they have their match. And, you know, match is going along pretty good. You know, kind of, you know, see what you get out of this. And Lacey comes back out and hits Becky with the woman's right. But Becky comes off of that and gets an inside cradle on Charlotte. I love that Becky, it was made it seem like that Becky was not going to let Lacey be the one that caused her to lose the match. So she immediately got the inside cradle for near fall. And then as she got back up, Charlotte just kicked her right in the face and Charlotte got the pin. So Charlotte actually won the match, not Lacey helping Charlotte win the match, so to say. So we had the Becky attacking Lacey after the match. And then Flair and Charlotte and Lacey worked together and beat down Becky. And then the fans were chanting, and they were chanting, "We want Bayley, we want Bayley, we want Bayley." And then Bayley's music hit. So here comes Bayley. Now she's got the Money in the Bank briefcase, and we got both champions in here. So we have a 2-on-2 here, Bayley and Becky helping out, and they got rid of Lacey, and Becky eventually ducked out, and Bayley. Charlotte, Bayley and Charlotte are going at it, and Charlotte went running into the turnbuckle, hit the turnbuckle hard, and then just fell out in a heap. So as this is happening, Bailey has the epiphany, uh-oh, I should cash this in. So Bailey gets the briefcase to the referee. They take a you know, a little bit, and then they announce that that she was cashing in, and the place erupted. And then Bailey goes to cover Charlotte, and Vince gets a near fall. Then Bailey goes off the top and hits the elbow. Wins title in 20 seconds. So Charlotte Flair, who's now a 9-time champion, will be in double digits soon. The crowd went crazy for Bailey winning the match. Bailey was reborn tonight. It was mega over. Crowd was crazy. She went and celebrated with the crowd. And considering how Bailey's been booked in recent years, and the fact that she hasn't been Bailey in a while, it was really great to see her back in a position where the fans were just red hot for her. And I saw somebody, I can't remember who it was on Twitter that said this, but they said this felt like the closest thing that WWE's done to ECW style booking in a long time. This felt like an ECW situation here, where you have all this stuff going on and Bailey ends up being the one that has one of the belts afterwards. So you go into the segment where Becky has two belts defending against two different women. Becky leaves with one title, and then a woman who wasn't even involved ends up leaving with another title.
You know what it's like? It's like the Taz, Sabu, Shane Douglas deal.
Yep.
Remember that with the TV title? It's very similar to that. You know, that's probably, you know, I think it probably comes to a lot of people's minds. That angle, which was great. Got us been what, 22 years?
1997, 22 years ago. Don't remind me of that. I graduated high school that year. Oh God.
But
how old were you?
Oh God, I was four and a half years old when that happened. That's like the first memories of my life. That's like the first year I remember.
I graduated high school. I mean they just did this last show with Alexa, but that was a different situation. But what's your thoughts on this, the cashing in the Money in the Bank on the same night? Do you think it's been done too much, or was this the right way to do it? What were your thoughts on the whole thing?
I do think there's an argument that can be made that, you know, it probably has started to become the situation where it's been done too many times in the same night. However, I actually kind of prefer it that way, because it gets annoying when these people wander around with a damn briefcase for 8 months and lose and job. And you know what I mean? It's like, God, you know, you got the briefcase, you're losing all the damn time. Like, and I don't know.
The albatross.
I like when they get out of the way. Get this shit out of the way. I'm tired of – I really don't – I like cash-ins are still exciting, admittedly. Admittedly, they are for me. I still get excited into it. But at the same time, I would kind of wish they'd just end the trope and stop.
It's an easy pop.
Or at least not as frequently.
It's an easy pop for the crowd, too.
Yes, it is. But this was really well done. The Charlotte-Becky match was solid. I thought the small package – I bet on the small package pin. I thought that was it, and the Hartford crowd did too. So that was really well done. The Bailey stuff was really well done. Big-time celebration in the crowd. It makes you wonder – you know, they did bring up Sasha in the earlier promo, and maybe Sasha has come to terms and is going to come back on TV and work, and maybe they come up with a deal or whatever, and I don't know. But, you know, part of me thinks Sasha Banks goes home upset, and WWE goes, okay, we'll show you. We'll give your best friend a huge push as a petty troll in some ways. No, I could be wrong, but, you know, it's just something to think about, too. But regardless, it was very satisfying. Bayley has been reborn, as you mentioned. It was very well done. Crowd popped huge for it. And that was sort of the end of all the crazy angles and important, really important stuff that happened in the first big chunk of the show, because Game of Thrones started, this segment ended at 8:54. So 6 minutes before Game of Thrones started. And I was just kind of interested to see what they were going to do. And I thought it was really interesting that they put in the two. Well, you know, we'll get to them, but they put the two men's title matches during Game of Thrones. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. But yeah, the whole cash-in deal was done really well. And I'm just happy that they kind of got through with at least one of the Money in the Bank deals, so we don't have to worry about it for another year. It was a very satisfying conclusion, and I'm looking forward to Bayley as champ. I think it's really going to help her and hopefully revive her career.
I think this also means that we're finally going to be through with Becky and Charlotte for a while. Becky's now going to be on Raw. So Becky and Lacey will continue for sure. But Becky and Charlotte's done. And now we can go to Charlotte and Bayley, Becky and Lacey. And yes, move on. Move on. All right. Roman Reigns was walking to the ring. He's about to face Elias. And Elias clocked him with a guitar. And then Elias just kept walking. And then Elias comes to the ring. So he's already bashed his acoustic guitar. Well, what does he do? He gets electric guitar for the first time. That's right. Elias goes electric. Kind of like Dylan at Royal Albert Hall. Not your brother, Dylan, but Bob Dylan. And although nobody yelled that fucking traitor at him, but they did it to Bob Dylan. But so Elias starts playing a song of electric guitar. And it was what it was. And then Elias, he makes fun of Hartford, including the Hartford Whalers, which I pop for that. And he eventually walks out, says, you know, he's done, blah, blah, blah. And then Roman Reigns' music hits. Roman comes flying out, hits him a Superman punch in a great spot. Roman sends him to the ring. They ring the bell. Roman spears him, pins Elias in 9 seconds. Crowd loved that. So this was a way to have Roman do his thing and not get booed. What a novel concept. Your thoughts?
There you go. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Yeah, I thought this was well done. I'm sure was planned to happen when it was, and it was planned to be fast, but it was also planned to happen with about 5 minutes to spare for Game of Thrones. So they said, all right, let's get all this in. Let's get Roman in before Game of Thrones starts. Seriously. I'm convinced they had people back there watching Game of Thrones, keeping up with what it did. Because the main event began at 10:19 and the games ended at 10:20. So they definitely were keeping up with that. Maybe I'm overplaying the crossover of wrestling fans and Game of Thrones fans, but I think that was a big deal. But yeah, this was a fun segment. I enjoyed it. Roman got to get cheers again because they're booking him. You know, that's how he should be booked in situations like this. It was fun.
Yeah. So, like I said, got Roman like a badass in his way and didn't get booed. So there you go. Moving on to other things with Shane McMahon. Who knows? Maybe him and Elias still got some unfinished business. Of course, what am I saying? They're not done. Far from done. All right. So, yes. Next, we get the Universal Heavyweight title matches. All we have left now are the two title matches and the Money in the Bank, men's Money in the Bank match. Seth Rollins defending against AJ Styles. And this was a tremendous match. These two guys went out there determined they were going to have a great match. And they did. And the fans were into it. Then to both guys, you know, just great stuff, man. God, there was some great spots this match, which I'll let you elaborate more as we go along. But the key spots of the match was Rollins going for a curb stomp, AJ catching him and giving him a Styles Clash in the air. That was great, and then Rollins' this frog splash, which he may have got the most height on a frog splash I've ever seen before, just all in the air, hit hard, and yeah, this was tremendous stuff. Rollins got out of the way of a phenomenal form, hit the ripcord knee, super kick, curb stomp, got the win, retains his title. AJ confronts him after the match. Rollins holds the belt up in his face. Styles, you know, offers his hand for friendship. They shook hands. Fans cheered, but some of them wanted the AJ to the deck him, turn heel. Didn't happen. But yeah, this was great, man. This is just tremendous stuff. I've seen some speculate that this may be the best main roster match on pay-per-view this year. So I want to get your thoughts on that and everything else that went on in the match.
I thought this was very good. I didn't like it quite as much as you did and others. To me, it was one of those, you know, this sounds like an indictment, but it really isn't. I thought it was more like a really good PWG style match. You know, it's Rollins style. Not particularly my favorite, but they busted their ass and the crowd loved it. And it was a very good match. And that spot, the curb stomp counter into the Styles Clash was incredible. And I popped and jumped out of my seat for that. That was amazing. When they pull stuff out like that, it's pretty spectacular stuff. That was nuts, man. Like they, I stuff like that is just amazing. Like that was like insane. This was a really good match. Nothing's been as good as Brian Kofi for the title at WrestleMania. So far, for me, that to me, that is an old school babyface heel, babyface. That to me, that is a superior match and a much better match, because the story was better, but that's not a knock on this match. This match was very good, and for people, you know, a lot of people, I could see why they loved this match. I didn't love it, but I liked it, and it was a very, very good match. I do want to bring up one more time, I think it's interesting, maybe I'm, you know, looking too much into it, but I do think it's interesting that the two men's title matches were on during Game of Thrones, when at least some of the audience was turning off the pay-per-view to check in to Game of Thrones. I thought that was an interesting, interesting thing. Maybe they think that the two champions aren't all that interesting and they know it. I don't know. I think that might be the case.
I think this is the way it was formatted.
Yeah. And also, I will say this. I don't want to, you know, jump in and spoil too much for the next match or, you know, in the next two segments for the next title match. But both matches had clean finishes and were just worked to be good matches. Whereas in the first 2 hours of the show, before Game of Thrones started, a lot of angles and big exciting moments happened and big announcements were made. And the same occurred in the main event, right? Whereas the two title matches were just go out and have good matches with clean finishes. So maybe that was the deal. You know what I mean? Like maybe it was, we'll have the stuff that might be considered must-see in terms of character and angle development, for where everybody can see that stuff. And then we'll have the two title matches, and not have anything too particularly exciting happen in terms of angle development is concerned. That was probably the method, in all honesty, to be fair.
Maybe. I mean I can see that being a reason, but I don't know. I mean, I understand that they were going to have the title matches, you know, back to back before the Money in the Bank match. So that, you know, I don't know. I mean, you could be right. You definitely could be right. You could be onto something there. I don't know. But yeah, this again, this was, I mean, and the reason why this worked in a way where a lot of people probably preferred this match was it was the quote unquote work rate match where, I mean, you have a story where AJ's trying to make his impression on Raw. You know, he wants to take over Raw like he took over SmackDown. And that's, you know, that's okay. I mean, the reason why Brian and Kofi was what it was because of the great story involved as well. It's not just the work in the ring. You have all the other ancillary stuff that went into place there. So, I mean, yeah, that's why that's a different style of match, because that appeals more to the people that are invested in storylines and invested in all this stuff. While this match would appeal more to the people that just want to watch a great match. That they don't really care. Sure. They don't care about being really emotionally involved. They just want to see just great performances and spots and high spots and stuff like that. So that's where I can see where they would prefer this type of match over a Brian Copeland in that regard. So both weekly great, in my opinion, for their own way. So yeah, Rollins retained, right decision, and we'll see what happens. We'll see if there's any more with these two down the line. All right, Kofi and Xavier have an interview next, where Xavier talks about he will be at ringside with Kofi. Kofi's going alone. So Kofi admits that New Day has been a huge reason why he is the champion. So we'll see if no New Day members around may change things for him. But next, we get Lucha House Party running out, which was odd. I thought, oh my God, they brought back the buffer match that we used to have years ago, where you would have some match, which was kind of a meaningless match, take place between like the world title match and some of our main event. Well, they come out there, and Lince Dorado and Kalisto Nash got to cut a promo in the ring. Wasn't very good. And then here comes Lars Sullivan's music. So Lars comes out. Lars has got some growth on his hair, on his head. And poor Grand Metalik, he screwed up his spot trying to hit Lars on the dive for the floor. Then Lars headbutts Kalisto. And in the process of headbutting Kalisto, Hardway cuts himself open on the head, top of the head. So he's juicing. He gives Kalisto the big running power bomb, and that was an interesting spot, especially with the blood. The blood enhanced this whole segment. I will say that it definitely gave this a different feeling with this large dude standing there with the blood running down his face. But here's the thing about this, you know, Lars this week.
I was just about to say something about this.
It's been reported that WWE has fined him $100,000 for all the stuff that happened years ago with his racially insensitive and all the other stuff, all the comments he made on Reddit and other places on the internet, once they were called to the carpet for that. So what better way to have Lars come out on television than beating up three Hispanic fellows? Amazing. It's like he couldn't beat up Heath Slater and Rhino. He had to beat up Lucha House Party. You might as well should have just had Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin wrestle each other, have him come out and beat both of them up.
Well, I mean, he has been beating our troops up.
That's true. But I mean, did we really need this segment on the show? Why?
No.
You know why? Because they have a hard-on for Lars Sullivan. That's why. Vince and Kevin Dunn and the guys like that, that's the type of guys they love. The big guys, the big monsters.
Yeah, this was not very good. It was kind of cool to see Lars bleed, and
that
I think enhanced the segment for sure. You know, but I just don't understand. Like, you have this guy that apologized to the locker room and fined him $100,000, whatever the hell it was, and then you come out here and have him beat the hell out of three Hispanics. Like, come on, like, that's just
yes.
I mean, unbelievable.
Yes,
it's just it's typical WWE. Yes.
I guess they thought that maybe, you know, we do this at the buffer between the two title matches. That way, you know, the fans, you know, we had this really hot match. We can, you know, get them into the, you know, let this happen, and they'll come back ready for the next title match. Well, we get the next title match. Kofi Kingston defending the WWE heavyweight title against Kevin Owens. The match was a good match for what it was. Both guys worked hard, but it never reached that gear it needed to reach. One reason probably because it came off of the Rollins-AJ match, which was just amazing. And these guys are going out there, and they're doing stuff, but it's not really connecting. I saw a lot of people that were responding to me on Twitter talking about, you know, I said the match kind of was weird to me. And a lot of people responded to me saying, well, it kind of felt like a U.S. or Intercontinental title match more than a world WWE title match. And I understand that sentiment. I really do. But the thing I want to talk about is, and this is something else I talked about on Twitter, is Kofi Kingston. Yes, Kofi, I mean, has done a hell of a job in this whole thing, in this renaissance and getting over and everything like that. But it's really noticeable. And maybe it's just one show, but I don't know. It's noticeable that without the other members of the New Day around, the heat is not as strong for him. And it starts with the intro. You know, without Big E there, it immediately goes into, it's a New Day, yes it is. If you got Big E there, you got Big E doing his shtick, which gets the crowd pumped up from the start. Don't you dare be sour, all this other stuff. So they're already ready to go. So you don't have Big E. You don't have Xavier at ringside. You don't have them doing their stuff. The trombone, the throwing out the pancakes, all this other stuff. It's just Kofi solo. And we've all seen Kofi solo for many years. And he's great, but it's just not the same. It's just not the same. The New Day works better as a group. You have to have the group, and that's why if they break them up, you know, if they don't do it right, it could really mess them all up. But anyway, I mean, and Owens has been turned, and you know. That whole thing, it was weird as it was. The whole thing there. So, I don't know. But this match felt really like it was a pale comparison of the Universal title match. I mean, it was good for what it was, but I don't know. What's your thoughts?
It was okay. It was fine. You know, it was good. It was a good, solid match. I agree with you on the Kofi and New Day thing. But I also think that fans really wanted Kevin Owens as a babyface badly. And he was very over for a few months as a babyface.
It was because it was fresh.
And then they turned him heel.
Yeah, and he's doing that.
And they just don't care. They don't care. They want the guy to be a face. They want to cheer him. They're not going to boo this guy. Like, they should have never turned him heel. Like, it was just Kevin Owens, heel Kevin Owens is a brand killer. Like, I was enjoying him as a face. He should be a face. I actually think Sami Zayn should be a heel.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, I think he's better as a heel. Character-wise. In-ring, he's better as a face, Zayn is. But as a character, I think Zayn's excellent as a heel. But, you know, it's just he's miscast again. And he's turned. I mean, they haven't turned him like as many, you know, as many times as they've turned Big Show or Braun. But, you know, he's been turned too many times. And people don't care about him as much anymore. This was just kind of I never had high hopes for this. I wasn't interested in the feud at all. I was bored by everything with these guys the last few weeks. This was fine, solid match, but you know, Kofi will be champ through the time he makes the visit to Ghana. And then I don't know. He might be losing that belt stopping rounds. I don't know, maybe not, but you know, they've got to find something interesting for him to do because, you know, he's a good wrestler. I think he's had a very good year in the ring. I think he's still somewhat over even by himself, but you know, they've got to find something interesting for him to do because feuding with a heel Kevin Owens is going to kill him. It's going to kill his momentum. That kills anybody's momentum. Really. I mean, look what happened to AJ Styles in 2017. I mean, that kills anybody's momentum. You know, feuding with a heel KO. I mean, that's just terrible. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody.
Yeah, Owens definitely need to be a babyface for a while. Absolutely.
This was not even that bad. It was just it wasn't bad at all, really. It was just sort of there, you know. It was just sort of there. It was fine.
But it felt like we were back in the Kofi Kingston Dolph Ziggler days of the, you know, their series of matches and stuff and that type of thing. So,
yep.
I don't know. We'll see where we go from here. All right. All throughout the show, they were pushing a Super Showdown, the next big show in Saudi Arabia, where we have such matches as Goldberg versus The Undertaker. Yep, the Saudis are putting the bill on that one. And Triple H versus Randy Orton, probably for the last time, so we're going to have that. Braun Strowman versus Bobby Lashley. The Demon, yes, the Demon, Finn Balor, against Andrade for the IC title. So they'll get the Demon in Saudi Arabia, although they've got Demons there already. And then we have the 50-man Battle Royal. Not 50-man Royal Rumble, 50-man Battle Royal, Devin, this time. We're all 50-man being in the ring at the same time. That's going to be a big-ass fucking ring, I would expect. But the thing that was interesting on this was the way they were plugging this show, which I think it comes off as a real, like, spitting-in-your-face deal, where they say it's as big, maybe even bigger than WrestleMania. Not good.
Yeah.
Not good at all.
No.
Because you're making this thing that you built to be the Super Bowl of wrestling. You know, this big spectacle event that people come from around the world to see. And you're saying that this show that you're having in this country that is a bought show by a shady government, and you're proclaiming this show is maybe even bigger than WrestleMania? Come on. Come on. That's insulting.
The World Wrestling Federation for over 50 years.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting paid the money. Leader. I mean, they are what they are, but
yeah, it's ridiculous. It's bad. It's dumb. It's stupid.
So
all the words. Yep.
And then Goldberg working the show, you know, of all things. That's,
yeah,
considering his Jewish heritage. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's a definitely interesting situation here. But
it is.
We'll see what happens as they're going to have the show, was it June the 2nd? 7th. On a Friday afternoon at 2 p.m. So, yeah. We'll have that to look forward to. I didn't watch the last one, so we'll see what happens here. All right. Main event time. Men's Money in the Bank. Baron Corbin. Finn Balor. Drew McIntyre. Randy Orton. Ricochet. Ali and Andrade. This is one of the best Money in the Bank matches ever. And this could have been maybe the best Money in the Bank match ever, had the finish been better than what it was. But let's talk about the match. These dudes went out and just killed themselves this match. especially in general, Balor, Ricochet, Ali, and Andrade. They went off in this match. I mean, the crazy spots, man. The sunset flip Andrade gave Finn Balor onto the ladder bridge was in full on insanity. Then we had the Ali Spanish flying Andrade off the ladder. This is crazy. Corbin chose Sam and Ali through the Spanish announce table very hard. Corbin chose slamming Balor on the ladder. McIntyre said, "Blessing Balor." Balor was just getting killed in this match. Drew throwing Ricochet over the top rope onto the ladder bridge on the floor. Just these dudes are going to war with each other. And just having this just kick-ass, tremendous fucking match. And, of course, Sami Zayn was involved, so we're missing a man. Ali's climbing up the ladder. Then here comes the pain.
Oh,
the music hits. And I had seen some people speculate that Brock was going to be the guy to come out. I was thinking Bray. Other people were thinking Bray, too, but... Sure enough, the newly retired from MMA, Brock Lesnar, returns, comes out, destroys Ali, pulls the briefcase down. Place went crazy. I mean, Brock is Brock. I mean, and they were surprised. They were not expecting it. The talk was that he had been hidden in the building all night, so people didn't know he was there. The funny thing about the thing was Brock running out, knocking the ladder to cameramen, who knocked them down. But Brock was genuinely excited for this. I mean, he was climbing the ladder, he was laughing, he was having the time of his life getting the briefcase down. And so at least he was happy. But boy. Just when you thought it was over for a while, here he comes. And Brock now has the Money in the Bank briefcase. They openly speculated on the broadcast, is he coming after Seth Rollins? Let me tell you, I don't think so. Brock will be going to SmackDown because Fox is going to want Brock Lesnar on that show. And Brock could be the one to go after Kofi. That would be the situation there. Brock beating Kofi to win the title, cashing in on it. And here we go. Brock is your WWE champion now on SmackDown. I think it's going to happen in the near future. So it sucks. It really does. Because, you know, we was hoping to have, you know, some time away from Brock for a while. But no, that can't happen. And I hate it for these guys in the match, man. They went out there and they were just, you know, just doing all kinds of wild, crazy shit. And to see that guy come out there and just climb up the ladder and win the briefcase on his own, even though they knew it was going to happen. But the fact that those guys, being such professionals they were going out there and doing all that great stuff, much respect to those guys. Much respect. But they knew that they weren't going to win. They had no chance of winning the match. So, here we go again. Brock bullshit. Another chapter to the story. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I burst out laughing when he came
out. I did too.
And I said, these goddamn bastards.
Vince McMahon loves him some Brock Lesnar.
Although I did laugh when Brock was... climb up the ladder and realize I had to climb one more rung and almost shit his pants. He's like, oh shit, this is high. He was like, woo, this is... Ollie also had a busted up nose on the bump when Brock pushed the ladder over. If you saw Ollie's face, his nose and mouth or something were all busted up. Who knows what happened? He probably bit his tongue when he hit the ropes.
Yeah, that didn't look too good.
That'd be my guess. No. His Chronicle is excellent, by the way.
I haven't seen it yet. Yeah, I heard it was really good.
This match is awesome. One of the best Money in the Bank ladder matches of all time, for sure. Finn Balor is over here working like Joey Janela and taking like literally ridiculous spots on his spine. Sunset Flip Powerbomb. I mean, you would have thought he would. You know, I mean, like if I mean, someone could superimpose a trampoline there, and that's I mean that's basically what it looked like. He bounced off of it and then bounced. I mean, that was insane. Probably the craziest, maybe the craziest Money in the Bank ladder match spot I've ever
that's
seen.
Insane.
That Sunset Flip Powerbomb. Then of course Balor gets choke slammed on top of the spine of a ladder like an idiot. Or if it's spine, but the side, you know, whatever. Then takes another crazy bump where he gets suplexed on a ladder or whatever. And then, I mean, just oh God, like, and then Ali's height on the choke slam through the announce table was absurd. Yeah, this match was awesome. Great, great match. Finish was well done, but I mean, it's fucking Brock. Come on. Like, it's annoying. I kind of think you are, you know, I think you're right. But at the same time, I you know, Rollins doesn't have an opponent yet for Super Showdown.
I just don't see I don't see it. I mean, you could be right. I don't know. I just don't know.
You know, we got the Beast in the Bank now.
He's going to be on SmackDown. I mean, there's no way around it.
At least, the one positive, if there is anything positive about it, although I don't know if you really would call it, but at least we won't have the Money in the Bank briefcase guy there every week. And you're always wondering why this idiot.
Now I know what match you're going to do Super Showdown. The match they couldn't do at Mania. Roman Brock.
Oh.
Shane McMahon's going to be the one to make that match.
Oh, there you go.
It's bigger than WrestleMania.
You might be on to something. Yeah. There you go.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I see. Yeah, that makes total sense.
I wonder if Roman would beat him. Or no chance.
I think it'd be some type of shit finish.
Yeah.
Or something. That's what I see. I don't know if that's gonna happen. I just don't see it because I think Brock's gonna be on SmackDown. It makes no sense to have him, do Rollins again.
Here's the question: if Brock's retired from MMA, is he gonna be on Fox? Is he gonna be on SmackDown on Fox every week? Every week.
He'll be on Fox just about every week.
Yeah. Every week, though.
Well, not every week, but he'll be on there. Whenever like he was on Raw, I don't know. I mean, it all depends. It all depends on if he wants to work on Friday nights.
Yeah, you get.
So, I don't know. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised.
No,
but it was. I mean, you knew he's coming back. You knew he's going to be involved in the title scene. Because he always is. Vince loves him. So, we'll see. I just can't see him doing stuff with Rollins again. You know, it makes sense. I just don't see it. So, I don't know. It kind of put a damper on the whole thing, though. It really did. Because I was really into that match. And then that music hit. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Sorry. And I started laughing. I was like, oh, fuck. So, yep. So that's Money in the Bank, folks. All right, Devin. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle.
High thumbs in the middle. I'm not quite a thumbs up. I came in not caring and did not have any expectations for the show, so I think it did exceed expectations, but. Brock did put a damper, so I'm going to give it a high middle. Almost a thumbs up, but, you know, Brock's Brock.
All right. I'm going thumbs down. I thoroughly enjoyed some of the matches on the show. And Bayley winning Money in the Bank, great. Rollins AJ, great. Men's Money in the Bank match to a finish. Great. But when you do that finish, I can't do anything but a thumbs down. I'm sorry. It's just it makes the guys look like fools.
It does.
I can't help but give it a thumbs down. I'm sorry.
And we know what happens when Brock's around. He beats everybody and beats him clean. So it's not like anybody has a chance to compete with the guy. You know what I mean? It's like, well, he's back.
Yeah, exactly. And now we're just speculating on what the fuck they're going to do with him. So, the WWE.
Yeah.
Never change, huh? Never change.
Yeah. The ratings are down.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy that will very rarely appear on television. Well, Super Showdown is coming up. I don't know if we're going to do a show for that because, again, I work during the afternoons on Friday. And
I'll probably be working that day. I'll watch
it. And I really don't care to watch it.
I don't care. I don't care much for it either. But, I mean, I'll watch it, but, you know, whatever. I don't care to do it.
Yeah, so we won't be doing one for that, but we'll be back. We'll be back for Stomping Grounds
on June
23rd. In another month. So we'll see what happens then a month from now. All right, Devin. Thank you as always for doing this with me. Appreciate it.
Yes,
sir. This is Chris saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia.